when it comes to thinking we're really good at not doing that.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is bioanthropologist and blogger Greg Layden. He's here to talk to us about the Heartland Institute's bullshit book, Why Scientists Disagree About Global Warming.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
I deny the existence of this podcast.
And today, our guest is bioanthropologist Greg Layden.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well.
I think most of what our interaction is Twitter. You are very prolific on Twitter. You have a lot of great stuff to share there. You have some good shade to cast there sometimes. It's good stuff. But you're here to talk about this book that was sent out for the Heartland Institute.
Heartland Institute.
They sent it out to a lot of teachers and educators, mostly science educators.
They claim that they sent it out to about 300,000 science teachers.
Yeah, that's their number.
Is that, do you know if that's globally or
in the United States?
In the United States, 300,000.
It's probably not. It's probably. I mean, they could if. I mean, like my mother was a math teacher, and they had a professional organization, you know, National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. Now, I don't know how many people were on that, were members of that group, but I'm sure that the Science Teachers of America have a similar organization,
yeah.
Fraternal organization.
There's a couple of them in sort of content area. So there are science teachers associations that I don't think give out their addresses. But the my wife teaches at YZ. Go Trojans. And she has probably a dozen or 15 teachers in her department. I think two of them got this. I don't think 300,000 teachers got this. I don't think they sent out 300,000. I think they lie.
Shocking.
That's weird.
I just
have to say that it doesn't matter how long they fight, the Trojans will eventually lose. That's just a
They
fact.
Have this big horse. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
horse.
For good things. So they sent this book of... is the goal of the book to be... advocating the idea that climate change is not a thing happening, or that it's not harmful, or what's the goal?
Yeah, well, the goal of the book is basically to seed uncertainty about climate change. Mm-hmm. That's the main goal, and to show that the key pieces of evidence for climate change are faulty or fabricated or wrong, or that there's evidence that counters climate change. I think a better way of thinking about it is actually to look at how the Heartland Institute does their stuff. You know, they started up, I think they were formed about 1983 or 4. And by the late 80s and early 90s, they were dealing with tobacco.
Oh,
okay. Sure.
And to give you an example of how they did that, I actually knew a guy back then who was on contract with the tobacco industry to demonstrate that tobacco wasn't that bad for you. And the way they did it was very effective, because it turns out that if you removed lung cancer as a problem, like made tobacco that just didn't give you lung cancer, mm-hmm. the amount of negative outcome from everyone smoking wouldn't change much. Okay, because really most people who are going to get lung cancer are predisposed to do so, and will get lung cancer sooner or later, whether they smoke or not.
Sure.
If you are predisposed to get lung cancer and you smoke, that's it. You're going to get it. I'm oversimplifying here a bit.
Sure.
But tobacco harms people through other cardiovascular disease.
Right.
Mostly. And lung cancer is not the big issue. But it's a scary issue. So it's the issue that the anti-smoking people back in the 60s and 70s focused on. Go back to those old ads, and they're showing this lung and this cancer, and the guy dies of cancer.
I remember seeing the black cancerous lung next to a healthy pink lung.
And that guy who was a prosecutor on the Perry Mason show,
mm-hmm.
who died of lung cancer.
Yep. By the time you see this, I'll be dead.
Right, that guy.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, and so did did Yul Brynner. Yul Brynner did one too. A commercial about don't smoke.
Mm-hmm. So this guy that I knew was doing research basically was showing that the lung cancer is not the link to tobacco doesn't really increase lung cancer rates as much as they say. So they took the an area where the anti-smoking people had both made the mistake of taking making lung cancer the poster child for smoking, which was a bad idea, and the weakest research area, and showed if this area of research is weak and those people are being alarmists, then everything else is wrong too.
How can we trust anything they say if this is their big claim?
Which is one of the more believable logical fallacies, really, to discredit all evidence based
poisoning the well.
Poisoning the well.
It's actually true. If everyone's having an honest conversation about everything, mm-hmm. and there's a subset of people who just get something badly wrong, you're going to look at the other stuff they're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so it actually is a legitimate question in a way. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Just today, a paper came out, just moments before coming here, I just glanced at the beginning of it, showing that there's a glacier in Antarctica that is deteriorating at a significantly slower rate than they thought.
Oh, sure.
Therefore, all of the melting of ice that's happening
even if there's another glacier in Antarctica that is deteriorating at a faster rate.
Right.
Then.
In this case, this is actually one that had been where research had been published showing a certain rate, and they say, no, that rate's wrong. Now, this, just because it's been said in this paper doesn't mean that it's correct.
Mm-hmm. I
mean,
right.
They're actually, it's very hard to tell how fast a glacier, because you know what? They're like really glacial in their movements. so much of them
is under the water. And,
So it's very hard. But anyway, so that would be an example of taking that, and discrediting all research on the Antarctic glaciers.
Well, and soon there will be some article of someone's blog post saying studies have shown,
they won't
cite it, and they won't explain that it's one study out of all the others, which I think is something this book really harps on, is the myth that 97% of scientists agree that on climate change, and that actually it's a very, I think they call it a full-throated debate. That's a very a very ongoing angry debate that we're being lied to, that these scientists all are in agreement, that there's all these brave, valiant scientists who are being silenced.
Right. Now, one of the the consensus issue, that's a very important key issue, the deniers do have a petition of 30,000 names of scientists who say climate change isn't real.
Yeah, but isn't that petition like 15 years old or something?
It's older
like
than that, and it's bogus in so many ways, it's ridiculous.
Wouldn't that even be just about 3% of scientists?
It's still a very tiny number of scientists.
I mean,
I had a job at the University
of Michigan. Not all of them are climate scientists. It's like literally anybody in any scientific field, or even anybody with a PhD.
Yeah.
If you go and look at it, and I don't know whether these people are real or not, but I know that I've looked at the list because I have a friend who's a denier. I'm like, go look at this list. So I'm like, all right, I'll go look at the list. And I mean, some of the people on there have a PhD in English literature. It's like, okay, well, yes, they have a PhD, but that doesn't mean that they know shit about climate science.
Some friends of mine, I went on the list and we sampled it, and way less than 1% of the people on there could be considered even vaguely legitimate.
Wow.
And like I said, they're often very old. So they've got that list. But the argument against a consensus, then there's this it's a bit confusing. There's a 97%, 98%, these different numbers. There's two studies. One asked about all the climate scientists that they, in some sample, what do you think? That was the first study. It was a smaller sample. And the second, there's been many studies, but the next major one was looking at the peer-reviewed literature, asking if in a set of journals that published stuff related to this, and then asking, does this article deal with climate science in a way that would even address this issue? And then if it does, what does it say?
Hmm.
And there you get this peer-reviewed paper consensus, okay? And the argument to that is fluff. It's science is not a beauty contest. Science is not a poll. Science is not an election.
Yeah.
Okay? So somehow it doesn't matter. Now, the problem with the New York Times, right, with Bret Stephens?
No.
Oh, well, Bret Stephens, the Wall Street Journal opinion writer, has joined the New York Times and is now writing an opinion. He's a climate denying. He's also just kind of a jerk. You can say asshole on this, right?
Oh, whatever the fuck you want.
He's done. If you just went through the list of things that he said, he's like sort of Ann Coulter kind of.
Okay.
And the New York Times hired him. And a lot of us have been writing about it now. And in his first article, he gives this saying from the Quran or someplace. No, it's from the Torah, I think.
Okay.
Something about if a man is 55% right, then you should admire that and thank God. If he's 75% right, you should look more carefully because that's a little bit too much. And if he's 90% right, do not believe him.
Okay. Oh my God!
So that's the argument for
so the more evidence,
all climate scientists the more, thinking the same thing must be wrong.
The more supports a particular point of view, the less you should accept it.
Right.
I'm willing to bet this guy also thinks that we should just accept that Trump's the president because more people voted for
the
him.
The guy
United
hates
States.
Trump. He's a right winger who actually hates Trump.
So he's 50% right.
He's right.
I guess we should admire him and thank God.
Thanks, God.
Exactly. We all know what that means on this podcast.
Yeah.
One of the like little subtitle blurbs or whatever that I saw for the disagree about global warming book was it's an independent second opinion, but. But
the
is
Heartland
it really
Institute is are they it a, really independent,
but, or is it even a second opinion? If 90, you know, high 90% of experts tend to agree, one measuring it one way or measuring another, it seems like there's a fairly large consensus.
Scientifically, wouldn't a second opinion be going back and redoing all of this research to see if you get different results?
There's a great example of that, and that's a good idea in a way. You know, there's a NASA Goddard Institute of Space Science has done a study, a major research project, in which they have taken all of the thermometers from around the world from 1880 to the present, and you know, done this. The curve, when you say it's the warmest month, it's the warmest year, that's the data. Okay, Meteorology Institute of Japan has done the same thing. The Meteorology Institute of Great Britain has done the same thing. So there's these several different data sets, and they're often the same exact thermometers, but the data is being processed and crunched in different ways. So this organization, led by a person who's very skeptical out at Berkeley, said, let's you know, this is wrong. This is heat island effects, because seas are warmer, it makes the whole planet look warmer, and your thermometers are all broken, and everything's wrong. Let's take our method. We got a method. We're going to take it, and we're going to be really more careful, and we're going to use better part of the data and do with this other math that's better, and we're just going to do it right, and we're going to get it right. And it was actually called the BEST project. It was a Berkeley Earth Science something project. Okay. And so they went away, and they came back 3 years later, and they said, we've got our data, we've got our curve, we now know what the actual warming pattern of the Earth is. And you know what? It was the same.
Oh,
except
boy.
The BEST showed, the curve actually shows slightly more warming. For some reason, they all show slightly different results because they use slightly different math.
So did they justify that? Did this person who was a skeptic say, I was wrong?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome.
So a real skeptic then.
Yeah,
a actual skeptic.
Something I hate is when people like this, people who write this kind of climate change book, say to me, well, I'm a skeptic, so that's why I don't believe in science.
Yeah, because right, I'm a better scientist than you're a scientist.
Right.
Yeah.
I have my internet doctorate, and therefore I have Googled several things that disagree with this, like anti-vaxxers and anyone else who thinks they have
I read a very convincing article on National Health, Natural Health News Organic.
Yeah.
Gosh, man.
That's pretty much, that sums up the entire episode. We should just call it "Gosh, man."
the other thing that is the current sort of denial trope that I think is important is actually Judith Curry, who's a friend of these guys, who was a legitimate climate scientist. Oh no, is that my phone?
Nope, that's fine.
All right. It's whatever.
Oh, sorry about that.
No worries.
No worries.
You can delete this, right?
Probably.
We can, but we won't.
We'll just blame it on
all the other sounds.
We'll just embarrass you.
I can't believe my phone rang, you guys. I'm a dumb girl.
I'm just really glad that I changed my ringer yesterday.
What did it used to be?
Actually, it was okay. It was a TARDIS landing.
Oh, that would be better.
I changed it because the beginning of it is too quiet and I could never get the
phone. Oh, sure.
It
ramps up.
Yeah, I had a ringtone like that from a video game that I loved but I couldn't use. Yeah. So tropes.
Yeah. Judith Curry was actually a legitimate climate scientist who did real legitimate work on storms and so on. But then for some reason became more and more, you know, she sort of slowly went over to the dark side and more recently has gone all the way.
Mm.
And she's created this concept she calls the uncertainty monster. And I think that Brett Stevens was using this in his column as well, that there is uncertainty. Therefore, we are uncertain. And you can't really say that climate change is happening. And this is a problem that I think in science communication we have failed in a sense a lot of times when people try to figure out what is science, when people have an assumption of what science is, for one thing, if you go to high school and you learn from your physics teachers what science is, they'll tell you about the science method, scientific method, right? Mm-hmm. Go to the biology teachers, ask them. They have a different scientific method.
They do.
Okay, it doesn't sound the same. You notice that, right?
Yep.
You know, it's funny, the biology teachers don't necessarily know that this is happening. The physics teachers don't know, but they're given two different stories
of
what science is.
Right.
And there's all kinds of differences, and that isn't even the whole story. Something that people often miss and don't understand about science is when you look at a graph, for example, of the temperature going up, just imagine a squiggle going from left to right, going up and down, but mostly going up from the mid-19th century to the present as global surface temperature. Mm-hmm. That is not what scientists are interested in. If you look at the graph in the scientific paper, there's these up and down lines above and below that squiggle. There's a shaded area around it. There's this indication of variance and variation. Okay, that's what scientists are interested in. We are not interested in explaining how does A cause B. We are interested in explaining how does variation in A relate to variation in B.
Oh, I like that.
Science is all about variation and explaining variation. You have done your job when you see something that varies in nature and you've explained the factors that cause the variation. That's what we do. Okay, and that isn't part of most of what gets talked about in terms of science. So where does the variation come from? And what Judith Curry is famous for is doing a very complicated mathematical study and simulation with variation in which she showed this weird phenomenon where there were these ups and downs occurred from her simulation program in weather. So are we just looking at an up and we'll eventually be coming to a down in temperature? And other people who do this kind of work looked at her model and realized you've created an artifact. This is an artifact of your program. There's a problem in your model system here. It's an artifact that you've created. She called it the stadium wave. Because it's like a stadium wave. It's an emergent phenomenon where a few people do this thing with their arms. And she said it's just an emergent phenomenon of the data. And the answer is an emergent phenomenon of the climate system is to have this up and down wave. Other people looked at it and realized it's an emergent phenomenon of your program to create a fake up and down wave.
Oh my gosh.
That was kind of the break point for her. The point being that there is uncertainty in everything because people associate variation with uncertainty. The fact that you don't really know what's going to happen when you roll a dice.
Yeah.
The dice, in fact, are numbered from 1 through 12 with two die and two dice, whatever it is. And we know that there's going to be...
2 through 12.
You know, there's going to be...
two dice.
That's it could a good be a point. 12-sided die.
Yeah. It could be a 12. Anyway, if we actually look at it and figure out, we do know what the outcomes are going to be. Mm-hmm. And we know what the range of outcomes and the probabilistic range of outcomes, yet each individual role is uncertain.
Sure.
Therefore, we don't know what a dice is.
Right. See, that's
great.
It's just like how I think there's stupid people think that a scientific theory is the same as having a theory about something else. And the idea that, it's climate change theory. They don't really know. It's like, well, then gravity is a theory, but you're experiencing it.
Stupid people are able to accept that other words in the dictionary have multiple meanings, but they are not able to accept that theory has multiple meanings.
It's very easy to say... people that don't believe in climate change are stupid, but there are some intelligent people out there that are supporting these.
I was just insulting them.
We can do that on this podcast. Very few of them are listening.
Yeah. My brain starts to smoke when someone tells me, you know, well, evolution's just a theory. They don't actually know. And it's like, not what theory means.
But I was bringing up more as a point that it's important to note that, I mean, there are some... I ascribe, when someone's intelligent and either knowingly or unknowingly supporting something like this, my mind immediately ascribes a sinisterness to it. Mm. And that could just be my perceptions. But
I think it's usually true. I mean, there is a motivated reasoning going on here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think people put a lot of emphasis on the fact that not accepting climate change gives an economic benefit to some people. So it's always the Koch brothers who stand in for all of the other bad guys, because there are only just two of them, who are paying for all this stuff, this denial. But I think there's another underappreciated factor behind this, and you see it in other areas of politics as well. And this is just basic hippie punching. If you see that somebody is doing something that looks like it's pro-environmental, which would be concerned about climate change, then you just... punch them.
Or honestly, we've talked about this before on the podcast, how college boy is an insult in this country. You think you're so smart?
The intellectual elite.
Harvard, he's a Harvard elite. Like, well, good. He's like,
Greg is a Harvard elite.
Yeah. When they're like, the president thinks he's so smart. It's like, shouldn't the president be real smart? Like, isn't that what we want?
Wouldn't we want the best and brightest in charge to some degree?
But that's not, intelligence has not been valued in this country pretty much ever. It has always been hard work and sweat and grit. And so I think that it's very easy for people along with hippie punching, which they kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. It's kicking the nerd.
Yeah.
You know, and
statistically, hard work has very little to do with wealth.
Well, and I think it's also
very little.
It's also you can't tell me what to do. It's when people are coming and saying, you know what, we have to change the way we behave to fix this problem. Right. The response from a lot of people is, screw you, I'll change the way that I behave if I want to change the way that I behave.
I've seen people throw cans away into the garbage when there is a recycling bin literally next to it.
Yeah.
Right. Literally
same
next
amount
to
of
it.
Effort.
And they just throw it in the garbage.
fuck recycling. I don't like recycling because I don't like being forced to do something that's better.
When we had Sharon Seitler, the bird chick, on our podcast, she talked about how in the birding community there are, you know, conservative folks, liberal folks, all sorts of people, different beliefs that all like watching birds. There are people that are climate change deniers or otherwise politically or economically very conservative who have this importance of stewardship, where they're environmentally, they're like, well, hang on now, we need to protect the birds because that's my hobby. And some of those folks have come around because their own interests align with protecting the environment and therefore maybe acknowledging that some of this is reality and not, you know, burying their heads in the sand at all. But that does seem to be, those folks seem to be far and few between. This does seem very politically aligned.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about, you know, there's financial motivation, there's hippie punching. Both those things can go kind of hand in hand with conservative or right-leaning, whatever you want to say, folks. Why is this a political matter at all?
Well, partly it's because of places like the Heartland Institute. Although I think they are not, that we'll come back to them in a minute, but I don't think they're being that effective. But partly it is because of a systematic plan to make that true.
Okay.
By well-funded, well-heeled, and intelligently organized efforts. I think it was back in 1970-something when Barry Goldwater invited a bunch of people over to somewhere, and I read this story years ago in a New Yorker, you know, one of those communist magazines, and
liberal rag.
He basically said, "Here's a X number of, you know, millions of dollars, and we're going to divide it up among, you know, 10 people who are going to change the way America works politically over the next. Give me their names." Mm-hmm. And he said this to, like, you know, the movers and shakers that he knew. And they got the names, they got the people, they distributed the money, and they started things like the Heartland Institute. That's not Heartland.
Sure. But
they did things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at ALEC. Anybody who doesn't know what ALEC is should find out.
Mm.
Okay, it's American Legislative Something Committee.
ALEC.
ALEC.
Yeah.
And they basically are well-funded. They're funded by the Koch brothers and all the other dark money sources. And, you know, the Minnesota legislature, when the Republicans took over this year, they introduced something like 50 bills in the first day.
Yeah.
Where do you think they came from?
They were pre-written handed to them.
Same exact bills found in every state.
Yeah.
The bill that takes away, you know, right now, if you want to run for the House in Minnesota, you can do it. You don't have to spend any money on it. You raise some money, spend a little real money, but basically it doesn't cost you anything because the state pays for it.
Mm. Boilerplate candidates, boilerplate bills.
You know, so they want to get rid of that bill because that means that anybody can run for office and start a political career and see how it goes.
Sure.
And they don't want that. They only want their own people doing that. So,
right.
For example, that's just one example. Making it so that if you jaywalk while protesting, instead of it being a ticket, it's a felony or whatever.
Right.
It's just law of puts out. Yeah. Getting rid of protesters. So it basically, they have all
making
these bills.
A misdemeanor to hit somebody with your car who's on the road.
And some of it is all, I mean, I don't know how much of it is done. I don't know how much popular culture is manipulated for this purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I know that one thing that you should do a show on if you haven't already is the whole rise of the police state and how that works. Yeah. You know, I've always thought that that TV show Cops was basically part of that plan.
And oh, absolutely. It normalizes it. I've thought the same thing. My mom is really into those, into reality TV, but she loves watching Cops and Jail and all that stuff. Yeah. And she is very much their target audience of like, look at this fucking asshole getting arrested. Right. Oh, man, he's getting what came to him. Right. And I'm like, he's not... You were a lawyer. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know that he is not guilty until he's had his trial. And she's like, you can just tell. Look at him. And it's very much normalizing a police state where they show up and drag you out of your house in the middle of the night and everyone films it. And, yeah, I totally agree with that.
What people need to realize, I mean, the message, I think, there's really two completely separate things that are happening. One of them is climate change. And it's kind of funny when you think about it. There are scientists that are being attacked and... You know, in a McCarthyist way and so on. Mm-hmm. Their work is actually, when you think about it, not that important. Hmm. Because we don't really need to know that climate is going to change and we're all screwed. And exactly how screwed we are. What we need to know is how to get out of this.
How right. unscrewed.
That's more important.
Well, those voices are being silenced, too.
As someone who doesn't actually get any money from the government to do climate change research, I would give up all the money given to the climate change researchers in order to completely have the energy transition happen in 10 years.
Yeah. Hmm.
And they would, too. They would give it up, too. And so that's the second part.
Well, and that's the thing. Is if people talk about how much money is driving this industry, and it's like, do you understand how much money scientists really have? It's not, nobody's getting a mansion out of all this climate change cash that's rolling around, unless it's some of the folks at the Heartland Institute.
Yeah. What was your, you had
they're
a second.
Probably not either. Well, I guess my point is, well, first of all, just note that the energy transition is happening at the state level. Mm-hmm. And the climate science arguments happening at the national level. And that means that there are states where there's nothing going on. And there's states that are moving quickly. Minnesota was a state that's moving quickly until just a few weeks ago.
Right.
Huh. You know, we had the Volkswagen gave a lot of states a lot of money. I don't know how many millions, like $50 million or $100 million or some huge amount of money we got in this state. Because Volkswagen had to give everybody all this money because they cheated.
Yeah, right. On the emissions. Yeah.
Knew it at the time. I remember having an argument with some guy who was wrong on the internet about how, no, my car, my Prius, does better than your Volkswagen, and the physics doesn't allow that to be wrong. He's like, no, here's the data from Volkswagen. Anyway, the point is, the original plan was, well, first of all, this money is supposed to go to something having to do with the energy, with cleaning up the air that Volkswagen messed up for us. And the idea was to go out and buy a whole bunch of electric school buses.
Hmm.
And so start the process. That we have, if all of our school buses in this state were electric for the months of summer, June, July, August, that would be equivalent to installing a 300-megawatt power plant.
Wow.
For those Jesus. 3 months.
For summer?
For just the summer. Because the rest of the year they're using the buses. But during that period of time, they become a battery system that stores energy from windmills and so on.
Yeah.
And that storage allows us to have more green energy. So it ends up saving us electricity and making letting us use electricity we can otherwise use, which equals by the way, we have two nuclear power plants in the state. One of them is 500 megawatts, one's 1,000 megawatts. So this is 300.
Jeez.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Fucking lot.
It's
for a bunch of school buses.
Batteries are important. I
mean, by the way, it's a lot of school buses.
Batteries are important because there are times when power's cheaper or more efficient. You can save it. You can get it to places easier.
Here's the thing. Everything that you do with internal combustion engines, pretty much, except for maybe flying, you can do better with electric.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make electricity with clean energy better than with fossil fuels. Those are just two simple facts. And we just have to do it.
Yeah. There's been a good push with electric cars, and they seem to be taking off more and more in terms of like full electric as opposed to, you know, hybrids and things. And I think that, I think that's obviously small potatoes, but you were talking about how this is happening more at the state level than the national level. And that and abortion rights are two things where I never thought that I'd be someone going, yeah, states' rights,
right.
States' rights.
Well, states'
but,
rights.
To some degree, like there are times like with the health insurance, you know, when they were talking about, you know, getting rid of the ACA, and I was only able to calm my family down by saying, well, at least we're in Minnesota, you know, like, thank God for states' rights, finally.
At one point, it was looking like Minnesota, as I recall, was going to have worse health care because of the Obamacare.
Right.
Because we were so good.
Yeah.
Some deals were made, and we didn't have to do that. But, right. You know,
It's an astonishing time to be alive, to be honest. Frightening
is.
And astonishing.
Yeah. Well, before we go into five questions, You said you had one more thing you want to talk about with the Heartland Institute specifically.
Oh, yeah, just the utility of this book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, what did this do? Like, when it arrived when I was out of high school, you know, and and my wife came home and said, Seth got this book. You wouldn't believe it. And so here's how it works. You're going to start a new, you're going to update your curriculum. You're going to update your class. Mm-hmm. How do they do that? Okay. What they do is teachers don't do that.
Right.
They're too busy. Okay, mm-hmm. So just teaching, and about every 5 or 6 years, they have a curriculum review, mm-hmm. which is a huge amount of work for the teachers. Mm-hmm. It costs, at a 3,000 student high school, a science department might be $1 million in textbooks.
Jesus. Wow!
Right? Maybe $500,000, $1 million, $1.5 million. I don't know, depending on how many courses class they have, maybe $2 million. It's a big deal. They don't want to do it too often. When they do it, everybody's got extra work. Everything else gets put on the wayside,
mm-hmm.
and they figure out a textbook, they redo the curriculum, and they make the courses work. For something to come out of nowhere and be useful, it has to arrive the week before they start curriculum review.
Yeah.
Because once they start it, nothing from the outside is of interest. And before they do it, every single thing goes into the trash.
Absolutely.
My wife goes to her mailbox in her school. She takes the stuff out of the mailbox and puts it in the recycling box. She doesn't open anything.
Yeah.
Because it's of no use. Now, if a teacher has an interest in learning something, also, most courses in larger places are taught by multiple teachers.
Mm-hmm.
This came, I don't know if you saw this or not, but came with this pamphlet.
The front says, Freedom Rising,
Freedom Rising.
There's a child's hand releasing balloons.
Yes. Oh, that's so environmentally friendly.
Oh, and it's kind of a brownish, palish, it's hard to tell what race this child is, which that helps a little bit.
And inside, it's got the names of all of their books and their publications. And, you know, what the guy that I know, my wife's colleague who got this, saw this pamphlet, he goes, oh, these are the libertarians. And then he handed the book to my wife and said, Greg wants this.
Solving problems, empowering people. Right.
So you're going to put in a politically motivated book to sneak into a school. You're going to throw your pamphlet that shows that you're a libertarian, politically motivated organization. It's not really a science book that we're giving you for free.
Yeah.
It's actually propaganda because of this pamphlet that comes with it.
It's very transparent.
It's like, why? It's like, you know about the Peter Glick affair, right?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
So the Heartland Institute is out there doing their thing. And Peter Glick was head of the Pacific Institute. He's the water conservation guy in California. And he gets hired by the National Center for Science Education to run their climate change denial section. So he's like one of the white hats, okay? He's a friend of mine. And one day he hears the Heartland Institute's having their board meeting at some hotel in San Francisco or someplace. So he walks into the hotel. And he walks up to the person who's running the desk that greets the people coming in, because it's a little conference, and says, is there a package for the board meeting today from Heartland, the board meeting? Is there a package? And the person goes, oh, yeah, sure, and hands him this disc and some papers. So he takes the disc and the papers, copies everything, sends them to about 5 or 6 of us, and we put it all on the internet.
Nice.
And it's all their plans for the next several years, including this.
Oh, boy.
This exact mailing, but a plan
but
like this.
Yeah. Something
years
like
ago.
That, yeah.
It was really funny because there were a bunch of people that are on the internet, and they decided they were going to send you all paperwork to be sued and like nasty mail. So I didn't. Everyone got theirs, and I didn't get mine. So I finally looked into it, and I found their list. They docked all of us. So I looked at with a list of names, and my name was on there, but the address was a dog kennel on the north side of Lake Mille Lacs. So they got the. And Peter got in big trouble because everyone said this was illegal and unethical. I asked a friend of mine who's an Emmy-winning news reporter. I said, how ethical is this to do exactly what he did? And he said, how do you think I won my Emmys?
Well, yeah, you listen to it, it's like he never misrepresented himself.
He never misrepresented himself.
Yeah. He asked a question and they handed him the packet.
Yeah. He didn't even ask for the packet. Is there a packet?
Is there one? Yeah, have it. Man.
Wow.
How much carbon emissions and other garbage got put into the environment to print all these stupid books?
It doesn't matter because it's not going to cause any effect. They're not worried about it.
And that's actually the really main point here is that
it's
the Heartland Institute
paper.
Is not really doing their job well. I did not. A lot of people were freaked out and got really worried about this book being out there. And I looked at the pamphlet, I heard what the teacher said, I remember the Heartland Institute, I thought, I'm not worried.
It's so dry. Like, we tried to page through it, and it's like, there's no teacher in the world who's going to sit down and read through something.
90% of it is citations for other stuff. It's like, in order to get anything out of this book useful, you have to be able to go and look at the studies that they're citing.
Right.
Most of which, as Molly observed, is information that is on their website.
Yeah,
so they're simply referring to their own material.
It seems like this, like, so you're saying this book isn't really that dangerous as much as it is kind of silly and dumb, but it is a symptom of a bigger problem that illustrates that these people are organized and well-financed and they have a plan, even if some elements of their plan are dumb and poorly executed. But it shows us that there is something sinister.
Godwin. I bet the Nazis did dumb stuff too. Yeah.
and the bad news is that even though they're so totally incompetent, there still are a lot of deniers out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone looking for an excuse?
I know smart people who are deniers.
Yeah. People looking for an excuse won't read it carefully because it confirms their beliefs. Right. And there's, even if the arguments are bad, they have a lot of money.
Well, I think the other thing it does is it takes people who aren't deniers, people like Greg, people like ourselves, it takes a whole bunch of extra time to just go, all right, what you're saying doesn't make any sense, and here's why. And instead of doing the important work, figuring out how to solve the problem, it is just keeping people focused on proving the problem exists.
Right.
And that takes resources away from what's really important.
Yeah. By the way, one thing that people should consider doing is looking at John Cook has a course. It's one of these massive online courses. It's called Climate Denial 101. Okay. Just look for that on the internet. Oof. It's from MIT. It's one of those courses. And it's, you could just take it as an auditor for free or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's the outcome of a lot of people's work. I work with John a lot and other people in that group. A lot of people do focus on this. There are people who basically their careers are about conspiracy theories and climate change denial and so on. And there's an academic world that studies this stuff. And they have come up with good information to tell us how. And you know, one thing we know is that you can't really change people's minds by confronting them with what they're wrong about.
No.
If you set up an experiment where you can get someone to change their minds a little bit, once they find out you did that, they get mad. And it's worse. It's much worse after that. But there is. Yeah, you're right. It's a distraction. It takes away resources. But it also has become an opportunity to study human nature.
Huh.
That's a really good point. That's a
very
really good
optimistic
point.
Way to look at it. Yeah. Kind of. Well, that's great. Greg, thanks so much for coming down. Are you ready to answer our five questions?
I had a conspiracy of mine a second ago. What was it about?
I don't remember, but question number one is, what is your favorite or most interesting conspiracy theory?
What was it? You talked about cops.
Yes, that's it, for sure. The police, this is not funny, it's serious, but, you know, the rise of the police state has been supported by social manipulation of social media to get people used to people watching cops beat up people who are brown, mostly.
That's a good conspiracy theory.
And it's part of, so that even the TV show where they, the America's Most Wanted.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's all part of that.
Sure.
To increase, because, you know, for years and years and years, there was a bill called S-1, the first bill introduced into the Senate by the Republicans, usually, but some Democrats did it too. Ted Kennedy, the lion of the Senate, was the major opponent of S-1. S-1 came out every year. It was a bill that today we know of as the Patriot Act. And it was introduced every year for like 15 years in the Senate. And
here we are.
Here we are. Thanks to my distant cousin, Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden.
It wasn't in response to that. It was put through because of that. That's interesting. Yeah. Wow, I didn't...
Exactly. It had always been there, and the dam was open finally.
Yeah. Jeez. All right.
They were able to work through things they'd always wanted to do. Question number two, what is your perfect two-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
Okay, at this point, actually, honestly, what I would do... Something I've been thinking about lately is I would go to the Ituri Forest in the Congo. Because I lived there for a long time. I did a lot of research there and I haven't been back in a long time. And probably everyone I know there is dead.
Yay!
Dark.
But their children are
there.
Oh. And I just think it would be nice to know what's going on there now. And it would be fun to, I'd have to, you know, I'd probably get sick and die.
Is it tropical rainforest or is it cloud forest?
Tropical rainforest. But slightly high altitude, so it's not as wet and icky as, like, your hair doesn't turn green when you live there.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, it does get a little sunny and dry every single day.
That's awesome. That's an answer we haven't heard before. I like that one. Our third question is, what is a movie or book that changed your life? And how?
You know, I know you told me before it's not supposed to be your favorite movie.
It doesn't have to be, but it can be.
If it was a movie, I would say that it was going to be A Little Big Man just because it was such a good movie.
And, yeah.
But it didn't change my life. What changed my life, actually, when I was a kid and I read it, was One Day in the Life of Ivan Dinosovic. I also learned how to pronounce Dinosovic.
I'm not familiar with the book.
Okay, maybe you know it was One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
It's Dinosovich? Is how
I
you
think
say
so.
It? All
I,
right.
I could be wrong.
Huh.
But it's basically a story
I've
of
only
a guy,
ever read the title.
You know,
so,
he's in a gulag and he stars.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
Boy, it's bad things can happen. And it's his autobiography. It's not a fiction.
It's amazing. But
it is. A lot of people hate the book because it really is a little bit like Waiting for Godot or something. Every day I woke up, there was no bread. I went to bed.
Yeah.
I woke up.
It's very Russian.
It was a small piece of bread. I ate the bread. I ate half the bread. Someone stole my bread and hit me. I went to bed. You know, it's that kind of thing. But it's for the whole book, you know, so it's kind of reading it as like a 13-year-old, it was an interesting.
So. Boy, yeah, that could leave a mark.
Yeah,
especially as a teenager, I think like the idea that there is suffering, like it's a lot of people read the Diary of Anne Frank when they're around that age. It was a similar thing.
If that had been the book, that would have been the book.
Yeah, it makes you realize there's something there that in our wonderful fat American lives that okay. Question number four: what's the geekiest thing you've ever done?
Reading One Day in Life. No.
When you woke up and there was bread.
The biggest thing I've ever done. It's hard to say because I guess I could tell you what the plan I'm working on now. I'm starting it because the weather's getting good and I have been getting the necessary materials and information together to do it because I'm working on a couple of geeky projects. But this one is a project to slow down the rainwater off my roof through a container so it goes very slow. Pass a bunch of strong magnets in order to collect meteorites.
That is super geeky. That's amazing.
Because, you know, anything that's iron, that's metallic, you know, ferric, that comes off your roof is good chance it's a meteorite.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
There's this dust that's constantly falling on us.
I suppose. I had no idea.
I wouldn't even thought of it.
And so it should work. And, of course, you can tell they're meteorites when you look at them through a microscope because they'll look like meteorites, right?
Sure.
they'll burn up and melt it and stuff. And
that's super cool.
That's really
I hope
cool.
that works.
Yeah.
And if it does, please send us pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. It kind of reminds me of panning for gold a little bit.
Yeah, except it's
much less
valuable.
It's less valuable, but it should be more valuable because it's cooler. All right. Question number five, what's your favorite hangover cure?
Okay, man, you know, the best hangover cure, as far as I know, is nothing that interesting. It's aspirin, sleep, and water.
Yeah.
Well, that's science.
I mean,
it's mostly water. It's mostly dehydration is your problem.
Right.
Yep, it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And aspirin is because you have a headache, and sleep is because you're hungover.
Well, my mom was a nurse in the NICU, and you know that was when she was in her early 20s, and so they would go out drinking on their days off, and they'd come in, and so they would get set up in a crash room with an IV of saline and a vitamin B shot.
Yeah.
Right. They'd just be like, oh, there you go. Just run this bag before you come in an hour before your shift and run a bag, and then you'll be a lot better. And it works really well.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I love that. That's fantastic. Well, Greg, thanks for answering our questions.
Yay.
You write at scienceblogs.com.
Right.
And
what's the name of your blog again?
I should explain why it's called what it is. It was originally, they said, what do you want to call your blog? And I was thinking evolution something, something evolution. And they said, you know, we have five blogs called evolution. You already have a brand. Can we just use your name?
Ah.
So they asked me to call it Greg Layden's blog.
Well, all right.
Why it's called Greg Layden's blog.
Damn, that's fancy.
I mean, it's accurate.
Otherwise known as the unimaginatively named Greg Layden's blog.
Oh, so, no. Otherwise known as the Bitch You Know My Name blog.
That's great. Well, folks, go check that out. You're Greg Layden on Twitter as well, right?
Yep.
Follow him there. Check out if you want to keep up to date on... interesting, positive things and horrible, dumb things that cause outrage seems to be the trend, and I get a kick out of it. Thank you so much for coming down and being our guest.
It's been great.
Glad you asked me. Yeah, no doubt. We're Geeks Without God. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter. We're on Patreon, and in a few days, we're going to go on a ghost hunt.
If you're a Patreon supporter and you're listening to this, we're going on a ghost hunt on Saturday. If you're not a Patreon supporter, we already went ghost hunting.
And, there's an episode about it that you don't get to listen to.
Yeah, if you want to
because you're not a Patreon.
If you want to hear about
ghosts,
it,
right?
You know, we'll find out. Oh boy.
or we found out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows?
This episode time travels.
Yeah. They give you like ghost hunting equipment. That's in quotes that you can't see out there.
It's supposed to be in St. Paul somewhere, so, right?
It's St. Anthony, Maine.
Yeah.
Like around
the river. Yeah.
Bootlegger stuff, you know.
Yeah. So we are going or went on a ghost hunt, and you can hear that episode. We'll put it up on Patreon once we're done editing it. And if you're a supporter at any level, you'll get to listen to that.
If you're on the fence about supporting us, now's a good time, because then you'll get to listen to us talk about what it was like to go on Ghosts.
Legit.
I'm sorry. I'm so excited, and I can't even, like, it's going to be so fun and ridiculous.
We've been Geeks Without God.
The hangover cure is going to come in handy.
Yeah,
the next day. Yeah, no doubt.
Ghost over cure.
We're Geeks Without God. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Keep an eye out for the Heartland Institute's next book, Why Mathematicians Think 2 plus 2 equals 5.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I always wave at the microphone.
I know.